by transcription. Columbia presents Opinion, Please. Today, the problem of sex education. Today, you're going to hear the story in the life of Janet Baker, an episode which began one Sunday night at a party.
I'm awfully sorry, Rita, but I've simply got to go home now.
What? Why, the party's hardly got started yet, Janet. You're going to miss a lot of fun. Isn't she, Arnold?
What? What's all this about?
Janet says she's got to go home.
Oh, nonsense. She doesn't mean a word of it. As a matter of fact, she's going to dance with me right now. Aren't you, Janet?
Oh, I'd just love to, Arnold. I'm having such a wonderful time, I hate to go, but, well, Mother gets so upset.
Oh, that's different. If your mother's worrying about you, I guess you better run along home right away.
Yes, we don't want to get you into trouble. Go get your things, Janet.
All right, but honestly, I do hate to go.
She's quite lovely, Rita. I'm glad you asked her tonight. You know, there's something about her that's different. Maybe it's that little innocent act she puts on.
Oh, that's no act, Arnold. What she doesn't know about life would fill a dozen big, fat volumes. She's strictly from the stork, believe
me. Oh? I didn't know there were any left like that.
There are quite a lot. You just don't get to meet them, that's all. You don't move in the respectable circles where they grow up, Arnold, dear.
And it looks as if I ought to change my circles. Say, do you think you could persuade her to join the party over the weekend?
Oh, I don't know.
I'd be very grateful, Rita.
Yes, I'm sure you would be. But she's much too young for you. Be sensible, Arnold. You're over 10 years older than she is. She'd have no idea in the world how to handle anyone like you.
Oh, I'm tired of all you slick know-it-all women. There's nothing natural or spontaneous left in you. Janet would be a welcome relief for me.
Mm-hmm. For you. But what about Janet? What was...
She's coming back. Say, you ask her about next weekend or I won't like you anymore, Rita.
Oh, all right, I'll try. Oh, Rita, I don't know how to thank you.
Please don't try. By the way, a few of us are driving up to the mountains over the weekend. We're going to spend Saturday night at Jack Burns' lodge. Would you like to join the party?
Me? Why, I'd love to. But you see, I don't know what Mother would say. She worries about me. She doesn't really understand, and it's so silly because...
I know. Well, why don't you just tell her you're going to spend the weekend with me here at the apartment? After all, she knows who I am. How about it? Will you come?
Oh, Rita, yes. Yes, I'll come. And thanks. Thanks for asking me.
I don't know, Janet. Of course, if you really want to go,
I... Oh, I do, Mother. Rita's awfully nice and...
Well, I dare say she is, but she's a lot older than you are. I'm not sure it's a good thing for you to be running around with her and her friends.
Oh, Mother, the way you talk, you'd think Rita wasn't respectable or something.
Oh, no, there's no question of that, child. Rita McConnell's mother was a Jackson. I can well remember when the Jacksons were the most socially prominent family in Centerville.
Then why on earth shouldn't I spend the weekend with her?
All right, Janet, dear. You seem so set on it. You can go.
Oh, thanks, Mother.
Well, I'll have to ask your father, of course. But I don't suppose he'll have any objection. But remember, I want you back here by 10 o'clock Sunday night at the very latest.
Well, Janet, are you glad you came?
Oh, it's you, Arnold. You sort of startled me. Of course I'm glad I came. Why, this lodge is one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen. And the view from the terrace here.
Yes, it's nice. But there's one thing wrong with it right now, from my point of view.
Why, what's that?
Oh, too many people around. Too much loud talk. Too many records on the phonograph. Too much cigarette smoke. Oh, I thought I was going to stifle inside there.
So did I. That's why I came out here, to get a breath of fresh air and another look at the view.
You know, Janet, I've got an idea. We've all got to head back to town in a few hours anyway, so why don't we climb into my car right now and start back before the others? Just the two of us.
Well, I don't know, Arnold.
Then we can take our time. Enjoy the drive in the daylight and drop in somewhere along the road for dinner. That'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would be wonderful. Oh, but there's Rita. I'd have to ask her. You see, she invited me.
Oh, never mind about her. You just slip upstairs quietly and get your bag, and I'll talk to Rita.
You really think it'll be all right?
Of course it will. We'll have ourselves a nice little private party, and you'll be home early into the bargain.
All right, Arnold.
Huh, good. Now run along and meet me down by the garage. Be as quick as you can. Happy, Janet?
I should say I am. My, but this is a lovely stretch of road. It's funny, but I don't remember it on the way up.
Oh, nothing funny about it. I'm taking you back a different way, that's all. Off the beaten track, so to speak.
Oh, won't it take us longer?
Mm-hmm. Just a bit, but we've got plenty of time. In a few more miles, we'll come to a place where we can get something to eat. So you just sit back and relax, my dear. Well, here we are, Janet. Hungry?
I certainly am. You know, I was beginning to think you'd just imagine this place. We took so long getting here.
Yes, it's much nearer town than I remembered. Well, climb out. I'm starving.
Oh, it's sort of chilly in here, isn't it?
Oh, what you need, Janet, is a little drink to warm you up after the drive.
Oh, thanks, Arnold, but I'd rather not if you don't mind. You see, I'm not used to it.
Oh, come on. Just a little one while we're waiting for the food. Just to keep me company?
Well...
I'll get your Collins. You can't tell it from a lemonade.
Well, just a very tiny one, then. I really shouldn't, you know.
Oh, you do love to dance, don't you, Janet?
Yes, I've always loved it, Arnold. And tonight I feel as if I want to go on dancing forever.
As I said once before, the night is yet young.
But it isn't, Arnold. It's late. I know it's late. We ought to go this very minute.
Oh, nonsense. It's barely 9 o'clock, and we're only a few miles from your home. One more little drink, one more little dance, and off we go. How's that?
Wonderful, Arnold. Just wonderful. Only... please don't let me be late. Please.
Norman, do you think I ought to phone that girl's apartment? Norman.
What's that?
Do you think I ought to phone Rita McConnell?
Rita McConnell? I don't know what you're talking about, Mother.
Oh, Norman, I do wish you wouldn't go to sleep just when I'm trying to get some sense out of you. It's Janet. She's an hour overdue. She's been spending the weekend with Rita McConnell. Don't you remember?
Oh, yeah, I remember, sure. Phone her up. It can't do any harm.
No answer from that girl's apartment. I've tried several times. I don't like it, Norman.
Oh, she's probably driving Janet home. I'll get all fussed, Mother. You know what young people are like these days. Well, I'm going up to bed. Are you coming?
Certainly not. I'm going to sit here and wait till that child gets home. I've got some sense of responsibility, even if you haven't.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, this police headquarters. Captain Devlin speaking. No, ma'am. No, we have no information on anyone of that name. Well, yes, of course we'll be on the lookout for her. Now, if you'll just give me your name and address, please. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, Mrs. Norman Baker. 79 Prospect Drive, West Centerfield, phone 6250. Well, certainly. Yes, I'll call you immediately. Oh, hello, Evans. Something to report?
Yes, Captain. We just got the goods on that so-and-so Arnold Weston.
What?
On him with a young girl in a cabin out behind a blue circle on the Bartlesville Road.
Good work. Yeah, that guy's caused more grief around here than you can add up.
Yeah.
He's got some kind of a line all these young kids fall for. I wish we could find a way to stop him.
I'm pretty sure we can this time.
Well, what's the story? Were you trailing him?
No, it was just luck. Walker and I were on routine patrol in the squad car.
Yeah?
As we passed the blue circle, I spotted a convertible outside that looked mighty familiar. I checked the plates by radio, and sure enough, the car turned out to be Weston's.
Well, not entirely luck, Evans.
Perhaps not. Anyway, we decided to hang around a while. By and by, Weston and the girl came out of the place, and she didn't look a day over 15.
That Weston's running true to form, all right.
Yeah, instead of heading for his car, they went back up behind the joint to one of the cabins. Gave him a few minutes and then walked in on him.
Well, is the girl all right?
Yes, but if you ask me, we arrived just in time.
Is she drunk?
No, she'd had a few drinks, but she wasn't drunk. Just in a kind of a daze.
I see. What's your personal opinion of her?
Well, I think she's on a level, Captain. Just an ordinary, decent kid who simply didn't know what she was getting into. I've never run across her before.
What's her name?
She says she's Janet Baker of 79 Prospect Drive. I checked with the phone book, and there's a Norman Baker listed at that address.
Yes, I know. I just had a call from the mother. You brought Weston and the girl in, I suppose.
Yeah, the girl's in the charge of the matron.
Oh, good, good. Your matron, please. Mrs. Gordon, will you step into my office, please? Yeah, that was good work, Evans. Good work.
Yes, Captain?
Oh, Mrs. Gordon. You've talked with that Baker girl, I suppose.
Yes?
As far as I can make out, she's just another girl who's fallen for Weston's line. Would you agree with that?
I certainly would.
And she's all right, is she?
Oh, yes, Captain, fortunately.
Good. Well, there won't be any charge. We can send her home. But I'd like you to go out and check on her family background at once. Seems perfectly okay, but you can't always tell.
Oh, I don't think you'll have to do that, Captain. Happens I know a good deal about that Baker family. My sister-in-law used to work for him.
Well, that's lucky. What's the setup?
Oh, fine. Lovely home, a lot of money. Parents well-educated and very respectable.
Any marital trouble?
None. Bakers have been married for more than 25 years, and happily married.
Well, then what's the answer?
Well, if you ask me, the answer is just plain ignorance. That Janet Baker simply hasn't the faintest idea of the realities of sex.
Ooh, that's pretty hard to believe. Just how do you account for it?
Well, her parents are pretty straight-laced, and I don't suppose they ever explained anything to her. Her own curiosity's been satisfied by just a lot of romantic nonsense. When that Weston got hold of her, she just didn't know what it was all about. Why, even now, she doesn't realize what nearly happened to her.
I see. But I'd like you to take the girl home right away and try and have a talk with her mother. I'll let them know that you're coming.
All right, Captain. I'll go at once.
Thank you, Miss Gordon. Now get me Centerville West 6200. Oh, Evans, how I hate these cases.
Me too, Captain.
Well, Mrs. Baker, Captain Devlin speaking. We found your daughter. She's on her way out to your place right now with the matron. And you'd better listen to what she has to say. Don't be too hard on the girl, though. Well, Mrs. Baker, if you take my advice, you'll see to it that your daughter learns the facts of life. Yes, that's just what I said. She needs sane, competent sex education. Yes. Well, then get her a good book. No, not something about birds and flowers. Something about people. Yes, in plain language, with pictures, too.
Many parents are like the Bakers, afraid to tell their children about the facts of life. Some parents go to the opposite extreme and tell their children more than they're able to understand. How much do young people need to know about sex? At what age should they be told? Who's responsible for giving them instruction? Their parents? The schools? We've invited a group of young people to give their views on these questions. Opinion, Please brings you their discussion.
In our CBS studios at WEEI, Fred Garrigus has as his guests four students from Boston University, Harvard, and Wellesley College. They are going to exchange views on sex education. As the discussion opens, we hear first from Fred Garrigus.
Just about one of the biggest little words in the American vocabulary is the three-letter word S-E-X, sex. We've just heard how one youngster found out about it the hard way, and how one family learned through bitter experience the importance of proper sex guidance. Today, more and more people are saying that our children should be told the truth about sex. But how should they be told? When should they be told? And who's to tell them? Since all this talk centers around our young people, let's hear from the younger generation itself on this subject. We've invited to our studio four college students, Miss Vivian Chapman from Wellesley, Mr. Milton Crave from Boston University, and Mr. Gilbert S. Hill and Gerald Y. Ginn of Harvard University. Let's take a quick survey of what each of our student guests has to say. How about it, Jerry? Do you think youngsters should be given sex education?
Mr. Garrigus, that's like asking me, do I think the sun is going to rise tomorrow? My answer is a big yes. Just as young people need the sunlight for the growth of their bodies, so they need the bright light of truth about sex for proper mental and emotional growth. They certainly aren't going to develop the right attitudes and standards if they haven't the right kind of information.
Well, what's your opinion, Gilbert?
I agree with Jerry 100%. The story that was just dramatized shows us what can happen because of sex ignorance, and that's just one case and one result. There are hundreds of thousands of other cases and a lot of other results. Why, I just read that in Massachusetts alone last year, almost 600 boys and girls between 15 and 19 years of age were reported as having venereal disease. And I wonder how many people know that there are about 80,000 illegitimate babies born every year in this country. And that, in a recent year, almost half of them were born to girls between 15 and 19. I say sex ignorance has done its job, and it couldn't be worse. It's time for a little education of the right kind.
Well, I can see we have some pretty strong opinions around the table. Milton, you're next.
I don't think you'll find many of us disagreeing on this question, Mr. Garrigus. Maybe it's because we're living in a different kind of world today. Just think of it. The greatest mysteries of science have been solved. Splitting the atom. It's considered perfectly normal and natural for young people to understand and talk about things like nuclear energy and protons and neutrons. And yet when it comes to sex, which is a human force as strong as the atom, this subject is surrounded in mystery. Personally, I think that kind of an approach to things is what's wrong with so much of the world today. We've made a great many strides in science and material things, but boy, we're still back in the dark ages in our social relationships. We don't know how to get along with other people, how to meet social problems. And in the final analysis, what is sex but education and living between the sexes?
You people are certainly presenting some good ideas for us to think about. But now, how about hearing from you, Vivian?
I say yes to more and better sex guidance, Mr. Garrigus. So that makes us unanimous. After all, we have just come through a war, and I suppose all the dislocations and feelings of insecurity were bound to follow. But if we're going to meet situations, we have to know how, don't we? If boys and girls are kept in ignorance about sex, how can people expect them to behave as they should? I think it's important for parents to give their children accurate information so they'll have a better understanding of themselves and be able to conduct themselves more wisely.
Well, now, some parents think that telling boys and girls these things when they're very young would only stir up their curiosity. They know it's a long time between the giving of the information and the time when they'll be getting married. So they say, wouldn't it be better to wait until my child is old enough to handle this information wisely?
As to that, Mr. Garrigus, I can only say that by the time some parents get around to telling their children, youngsters have already picked up all kinds of information and misinformation. After all, kids do get around, you know. They play with other children. They read newspapers and magazines. They hear bits of conversation from grown-ups. There's an old story about the father who said to his teenage son, "Sit down, Johnny. I want to talk to you about the facts of life." And the boy replied, "Okay, Pop. What is it you'd like to know?"
Then, Milton, you'd say waiting until adolescence is too late. How about the rest of you? And what age do you think boys and girls should be given sane sex information?
From their very earliest years. After all, that's when their behavior patterns are set. As Milton says, taking youngsters aside at a certain age and giving them a formal lecture just isn't the way to do it. By that time, they've gone through all kinds of fears and worries because of the half-truths they've learned. Since they've only been able to hear about sex on the sly, they've already been conditioned to thinking of it as cheap and obscene. You can't tell me this kind of attitude isn't responsible for a lot of the marriages that are going on the rocks today. Gil spoke about sex ignorance leading to VD and illegitimacy, and I think we have to realize that it's also partly responsible for the high divorce rate we have today.
Another thing about this business of when to tell children. If their questions have always been answered naturally and simply from childhood on, sex information doesn't come as a shock. It's just one of the many things they gradually learn as they grow up, in which they feel they've always known, just as they know how to eat and dress. In this way, it becomes a natural part of their day-by-day process of growth.
That's why I say the right age to start answering children is when they start asking. The delicacy of this whole subject really exists only in the parents' mind, not the children's. The youngsters don't see anything shameful about sex. So many things are new and mysterious to them. Naturally, they're curious, and why not? They ask questions about sex just as they do about everything else. And just to show how casually they think about it, we all know that in one breath they may ask how babies get here, and in the next they want to go out and play.
Or they'll ask the same question over and over again a dozen times.
Well, don't you think Gillis would show that children shouldn't be given too much information at one time?
Well, that's all right, Mr. Garrigus. I think children should be given just as much information as they need and are able to understand at a particular age. We don't have to cram it down their throats all at once.
I'll go along with you on that, Gil. That's where some parents fall down. They think if they give it in one big dose, they'll get it over with.
Now, look, so far we've been discussing sex guidance with just the parents in mind. But one point on which people frequently disagree is, whose job is it to give this education anyway? What do you folks say? Is it the parents' job?
Well, I'd say it's the job of every group which influences boys and girls and helps to educate them. And that includes the church and the school, as well as parents. But certainly, since children's attitudes are first shaped in the home, the parents have a big share of the responsibility. Speaking from my own experience, Mr. Garrigus, I know what it means to have parents who think like this. My father is a minister, and both he and my mother have always felt that it's their privilege for us children to go to them for sex information, just as we would for any other kind of help.
I think that's something important for parents to remember, Vivian. After all, if children know they can count on mother and dad to tell them the truth, they're able to talk to them about things like this. They'll learn to go to them for all sorts of advice while they're growing up.
That reminds me of a story. I have a friend who says the boys laughed so hard at him when he said babies came from heaven that he never quite trusted his mother again because she lied to him. Certainly, he says, he never went to her again with his problem.
That's exactly what I meant. And another thing, Mr. Garrigus said before that some parents feel that giving children information might only stir up their curiosity. I say it's unsatisfied curiosity that's bad. We all know that when someone won't tell you something, it only makes all the more intriguing. Then you want to find out about it all the more. I, for one, don't think boys and girls should have to find out about sex from other kids who have half information and who give them absurd ideas that may influence their whole outlook on life.
Gil, you look as if you wanted to say something here.
Yes, I do. I think we're condemning parents a little too harshly for not giving youngsters information. I agree with what the others have said, but let's not forget that most of our mothers and fathers themselves grew up at a time when their parents were taught it wasn't nice to talk about sex, and that it wasn't a subject to discuss with a child. Why blame parents just because they happen to grow up in a period like that?
I think Gil has something there. We might remember, too, that because our parents weren't taught, a lot of them don't know the correct and dignified words to use in teaching their children, so it's no wonder they become embarrassed and change the subject.
Yes, but this reminds me of who's going to tie the bell around the cat's neck. Everyone agrees a job has to be done, but when it comes to taking on the responsibility, then everyone says, let the other fellow do it.
Oh, don't get me wrong, Vivian. I'm not saying that parents shouldn't consider this their responsibility, but I do think we should realize that a good many of them aren't well prepared for the job.
Well, then, maybe the school should do it. Certainly the school reaches the child in his formative stages. What other agency outside of the home has for him so many hours and plays such an important part in affecting his life and personality?
Of course, some of the high schools and colleges are beginning to include courses in family life, Jerry. But again, there aren't too many teachers trained for this kind of work. Somebody has to teach the teachers.
And how about the role of the church? If all the groups which influence a child are going to be considered, then the church has a responsibility too.
The churches are trying to do their part. Or at least they're trying to make a beginning because they're concerned with the well-being of family life. Some of them have personal counseling, and I know of others that have classes for young people on preparation for marriage, as well as programs to help parents guide their children.
Coming back to the parents again, I'd like to bring up something else that I think is important. Whether parents realize it or not, they do give their youngsters a type of sex education, even if they don't say anything. Their attitudes and their expressions can mean a lot. remaining silent or evading a question will teach a child that here's something which must be bad because it can't be spoken about. And there's always a joke or a look which older people may think a youngster doesn't hear or see. All this would tend to give a child unsound thoughts about sex.
You know, you folks have had so much to say, I've hardly had a chance to get a word in edgewise. But in the time we got left, I would like to get your opinion on one other question. That is, how do you think children should first be taught about sex? Do you think they should be told about the birds and the bees and the flowers? Gil, what do you think?
I think that's one way to avoid getting down to brass tacks, Mr. Gergis. It's like the old stork story.
Milton, what do you say?
Well, I do think children should be told about the wonders of reproduction in nature. These are some of the greatest marvels in the world, and the more boys and girls know about such things, the more likely they are to have a sense of awe and respect toward reproduction in human life.
Maybe the answer is that they should be told about these things in nature to help broaden and enrich their thinking. As Milt says, to give them a feeling of reverence for such wonders. But I wouldn't say talk about nature should be used in place of straight talk about human beings.
I'd like to go back to that drama we heard the first part of today's Opinion Please program. And I wonder, the question arose, and we discussed it briefly while we were listening, whether or not proper sex education that we've been talking about would have prevented Janet in that story from getting into the trouble that she almost did. Isn't there more to the question of sex education than just that?
I think there is a little more than that, just that, frankly, I think that people should allow their children to get a little more sophistication in their growing up and should apply sex to basic human relations between people as well as keeping it on an ideal and idealistic sort of plane.
The rest of you have an opinion on that?
Well, it's my feeling that we do have to watch. The instruction may be a little bit too much unrealistic. We've got to be practical and make sure that the girl, as well as knowing the facts, learns to know about, just what was said, sophistication, so she can prevent facts from arising prematurely.
There are a lot of other questions I'd like to ask, but our time is just about up. I would say that if we always had the same kind of clear, straight thinking about sex guidance which you people have given us today, a lot of boys and girls, and older folks too, would be much better prepared for a happy, healthy way of life. Thanks to our student guests, Gilbert S. Hill and Gerald Genn from Harvard, Milton Cray from Boston University, and you, Vivian Chapman, from Wellesley College.
Thank you, Fred Garrigus, and our student guests from Boston University, Harvard, and Wellesley College. This concludes that portion of our program in which students discuss questions of public interest.
You've been listening to Opinion, Please. Today's discussion was on the topic sex education. The script preceding the discussion was written by Gerald Noxon, and the program was produced by Lynn Levine and directed by Rocco Tito. Music by Albert Berman. And our next program...
You weren't joking that first day. You married me for my money and nothing else. And ever since, you've been trying to kill me.
Well, you're out of your mind.
First, it was the window. You tried to push me out. Then the poison. But it didn't work.
You're crazy, raving mad. I'm going to call the doctor.
Fear of each other, suspicion, distrust, can break up even a happy marriage or peace between nations. Tune in Monday, Liberty Road, our next School of the Air broadcast, and Fear of War. The first complete world map since World War II is now ready in full color, made by Rand McNally. To get your copy, just send 10 cents to cover handling charges to CBS World Map, Box 828, Chicago, Illinois. I repeat the address, CBS World Map, Box 828, Chicago, Illinois.
The American School of the Air, in its 18th year on the Columbia Network, comes to you each day at this time transcribed. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
KIMA, yes.